Malachim Beis, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud. So Elisha has asked Eliyahu for a gift, Pishnayim, which the Das Mikra, some of the Mefarshim say, he's the Bechor among the Nevi'im, who are the students, the heirs of Eliyahu. So he's asking for his Bechor Pishnayim. He wants to have double Nevuah. He wants to have double presence. So Vayomer Hikshisa Lisho. And Eliyahu answered him, you have asked a very difficult thing. Im tira osi lukach me'itach. So it's going to be conditional, the fulfillment of this. And it's not on Eliyahu to fulfill a gift of prophecy anyway. Prophecy comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if you see me being taken from you at the moment that I ascend, and more about that next time, Yehilacha Kain, then it will be so for you. It will be that bracha that you'll get double. V'mayin lo yiyya. But if not, then it shall not be. So, according to Rashi, the way he sees it is it's a test of Elisha's own capabilities. It's, are you worthy of having double strength? And this is really complicated. Elisha himself is really complicated. So let's just take a little time to think about what we know about Elisha so far. Maybe through the lens of a few people who wrote about him. One of whom, interestingly, is the late Elie Wiesel, who wrote so much about Jewish faith, about surviving the Holocaust, about what it means to be a Jew in a world that militates against that. And he wrote a chapter about Elisha in a book that he just published, I believe posthumously, called Filled with Fire and Light, Portraits and Legends from the Bible, Talmud, and Hasidic World. Very interesting book. And a very interesting take, and a scholarly take, on Elisha. He sees Elisha as a very contradictory person. A man of faith, but also a carrier of hope or of punishment. Is he dominated by rage or by love? He astonishes us by his humanity as much as by his inflexibility. We're going to see examples of all of those coming up. But he starts with his biography. We meet Elisha ben Shaphat the first time, thanks to Eliyahu Anavi, who on the day that he finds him feels desperately lonely. He's being hunted down by Ahav and Jezebel. He found refuge in a cave. He's hungry, he's thirsty, he's exhausted. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu passes by and says, what are you doing here? We learned these psukim about him being at Har Sinai. And he says, I have done everything I can. I have shown kinah for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Klal Yisrael have forsaken. Now, Wiesel points out, this is heartbreaking, but is it entirely true? Certainly he's being persecuted. His life is definitely in danger. Is he the last surviving prophet? What about those who went underground? Those who will greet him later? Hashem doesn't correct Eliyahu when Eliyahu misspeaks on this case. But God did something better. He promised him a future. He gave Eliyahu his very last instructions to anoint three men. In Damascus, Hazael as king of Syria. In Yisrael, Yehu, the son of Nimshi, a general, as king of Yisrael. And also Elisha ben Shaphat from the village of Avel Mechola to be his successor as a prophet. And it will come to pass, whoever escapes the sword of Hazael will be slain by Yehu, whoever escapes the sword of Yehu will be slain by Elisha. So Elisha's going to speak, but he's also going to punish. He's going to have a sword. A prophet with a sword is a very unusual image. And then Eliyahu comes upon him plowing with 12 pairs of oxen, doesn't speak to him, just throws his cloak on him. And we know about Elisha, the fact that he comes from a wealthy family. They own fields, they own oxen. We know he's an obedient son. He goes to say goodbye to his parents. We know he has a good heart. But we know very little about him. And he stays in the shadows, following Eliyahu around. We know he's at Har Carmel, from a reference that's going to come in Perek Gimel. And now he follows Eliyahu on the final journey, and Eliyahu says to him three times, stay behind. Stay here. He says in Gilgal, Hashem is sending me to Bethel. And they keep going, and the local young prophets show up and tell Elisha Eliyahu is going to be taken away. And he tells him, stay here in Bethel, because Hashem is sending me to Yericho. And Elisha swears, I'm not going to leave you. And then another group of prophets, we learned, says, are you aware that your master will be taken away? And Elisha just says, be quiet to them. And then he says, stay here in Yericho. Hashem is taking me to the Yarden. And he won't leave. How strange, says Wiesel. Eliyahu in the beginning had wanted Elisha to follow him and is now pleading with him to stay away. But he fails. The two men remain together. The great heart of Elisha requires that he stay with him. Now, Eliyahu states three times his appeal to his young disciple not to follow him. He himself has been summoned elsewhere, to a place one goes alone. A fascinating way to talk about our passing from this world, the place one goes alone. You understand him. He wishes to spare Elisha, his disciple and friend, the pain of losing someone close to him. It is hard to understand Elisha. Three times he opposes his master's will. Eliyahu wants so much to be alone when confronting death, or God, or eternity. And Elisha refuses to grant him that wish. Elisha, who has never said no to his teacher, has now said it three times. He who has not opened his mouth in his master's presence is now arguing with him. Is it that he seeks to witness something no other human being had ever seen? The great prophet being taken away for good, that he shouldn't miss such an experience? Are there selfish reasons? Does he want to show his teacher he remains his disciple to the end? The Das Mikra says it was a test three times, like Rus and Naomi, where Rus was tested three times to see her level of commitment. Elisha's unbending presence, Rabbi Alex Israel says, is a sign of devotion and commitment to Eliyahu. And at this point, Eliyahu gives in. And now we're at the point where Eliyahu wishes to give his spiritual son, says Wiesel, a parting gift, which is only natural under the circumstances. Elisha could have asked him to wait a week, a day, an hour, to stay with him a bit longer. But he asks for something else. Powers. Special powers. Those powers that his teacher possesses. Better yet, he wants them to be twice as great. Is this fair? Is this polite? Is this respectful? Why does he wish to surpass the man who is responsible for his education and vocation? Elisha ben Shaphat, is this the lesson you have learned from your parents at home or from your teacher on the road? And in fact, we're going to see that he is granted this double. And we'll see also some of the Mefarshim. Some of the Mefarshim later are going to say by double powers, he just means, give me my power as a Navi plus Eliyahu's presence and power as a Navi, so that that presence will be with him to help him perform the miracles that he is going to perform in the future. So it's not that he wants to be double Eliyahu, according to some of the Mefarshim. It's that he wants to be double himself, to have Eliyahu with him, as it were. Elie Wiesel doesn't talk about this, but it's fascinating to see the complexity of what's going on here, to see that Elisha is so complicated, is so maybe sometimes conflicted. Wiesel also writes, Elisha so wanted to measure up to Eliyahu, but Eliyahu continued to be a presence to the generations that came after him. He will go on being so to the very last diaspora generation. He will be the one that will welcome the Messiah. So Eliyahu's presence is kept with us, and maybe it's Elisha that does this with, as the Mefarshim say, what he was asking for from Eliyahu. But then, says Elie Wiesel, what about Elisha? To whom, to what is he linked in our collective memory? A Talmudic legend attributes miracles to him and posthumous miracles to him, but compared to those of Eliyahu, of his master, they seem insignificant. What remains of his legacy and his teachings? A lesson of loyalty? Absolutely. As Yeshua was to Moshe, Elisha was to Eliyahu, the personification of the perfect disciple. Elie Wiesel does not come to conclusions about Elisha. He just highlights for us the many questions and what we can learn from Elisha ben Shaphat. And he's a tremendous figure. In fact, some who look at the balance of Sefer Melachim as a whole, Melachim Aleph plus Melachim Beis, see it in a sequence, starting with the greatness of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech at the beginning, then going through a sequence of kings, and then a pause at the center. Sifrei Eliyahu and Elisha. Eliyahu gets several prakim, Elisha gets several prakim. And then it reverses. a sequence of kings, and then the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. So it's like a V shape, where you go from Beis HaMikdash to kings to Eliyahu, and then Elisha to kings to Beis HaMikdash again. Elisha is a tremendously special person. A man of complexity, a Navi. I'll try at a different point. It'll have to be a standalone if Shlomi will be kind enough to release it, the Torah Moment people, about what Elie Wiesel says prophets are. It's fascinating. He's a fascinating man and a complex man himself. But with Elisha, his request here is at once tremendous on behalf of the Jewish people, if you see him keeping Eliyahu's presence with us, but at the same time, as Elie Wiesel said, difficult for us to understand because it sounds presumptuous, even though there's obviously a lot more going on under the surface than we think. So next time we're going to talk about Eliyahu and the fiery chariot, which in children's, the Midrash says, is always a very simple story. But it's not very simple, and it's difficult to understand, and we'll talk about that next time.